It had amused the prince to come hunting with the older men, political cronies of his father. He knew they invited him to curry favor, but still, it was thrilling. Illegal, but thrilling. He had been on this planet before, of course, at the invitation of Lord Thornbuckle. Everyone who was anyone had, at one time or another, spent interminable hours riding large, stinking, vicious beasts, chasing after small, stinking, vicious beasts. Silly work on the whole. And he had heard others, including this group, snicker about it privately. Lord Thornbuckle didn't care. He could afford not to care. He hadn't expected to feel queasy about it. He had felt queasy when he read the reports on the prison colonies, things his tutor had thought he ought to know. That was cruelty, if you liked. Confining someone to dirty, dangerous work and mean, ugly surroundings for years on end. Killing someone cleanly with a bullet in the head was merciful by comparison. He had agreed, in more than one not-so-casual conversation, that this was so. Imagining himself a prisoner, he would rather have died in the open like that than slowly of boredom and overwork. And hence the invitation to this hunt, which had thrilled him as much with its illicit nature as with its prestige. He was born to prestige. He didn't need it. But he found himself craving the respect of Admiral Lupescu and Senator-at-Large Bowdoin. Still, the first one he killed himself, that had startled him with his own reaction to it, the nausea and guilt, the feeling of shame for being ashamed, the reluctance of his fingers to touch the tattooed ear, which he must hack off and turn in to get credit for his trophy. He had done it, but he had made a private pact with himself to be content with one. That was surely enough to prove his ability, to prove he wasn't just a spoiled wastrel who got into quarrels over opera singers, his father's words. So after that first kill, he found reasons to hang around Bandon Lodge the rest of that day. It was easy to play cards too late, drink too much, and sleep heavily when someone knocked on his door. He roused late on the morning after his blood party, as they called it, and found the lodge quiet and nearly empty. Fine with him. His head ached, and the ear, proof of his trophy, looked disgusting in its jar of preservative. He stared at it morosely and rang for medicine and breakfast. After that, he went back to bed and slept heavily, having promised himself he would find some way of avoiding more hunting. But now, something had gone wrong. He didn't know what. Lupescu had yanked him out of bed in late afternoon and insisted that he had to come hunt again, right now, whether he wanted to or not. The habit of obedience to older men got him into the flitter before he could organize his mind to protest, and then it was too late. They were on the island, and Lupescu was telling him where to go and what to do in the rough voice he probably used on his subordinates in the regular fleet. Before he could argue, Lupescu was gone. The prince stumbled around that night, angry and tired, and found nothing but mud holes in the swamp. He measured his length in one, and only his custom hunting suit kept him dry. He heard some shots in the distance, but nothing close enough to startle him. At dawn, Lupescu reappeared and handed him a meal pack.
Eat this here. We have to get them all fast. None of us are going back until we do.
Why?
The meal pack had a picture of helicberry tarts on it, and he hated helicberries. He wanted puff cakes with sarmony honey, fat sausages, a bone melon.
Just do it.
Lupescu strode off, looking more military in the dangerous sense than the prince had seen before. And the prince, tired and hungry, sat down and ate his excellent breakfast. He did not follow Lupescu afterwards. He did not patrol his allotted section of island. It had ceased to be fun or exciting or anything but a deadly bore, and he would insist on returning to his comfortable bed on Bandon as soon as someone else showed up. Long after noon, someone else appeared, one of the servants with vaguely military bearing, and brought him two more meal packs, cold packs of water, and warnings. He was to stay on the island, he was not to drink any local water, he was not to call anyone on his comm unit, he was to shoot anything that didn't identify itself instantly. The prince was more than somewhat annoyed. One did not do this to princes. Even powerful political figures, even admirals, did not do this to princes. It was supposed to have been an adventure, with girls to follow, and the chance to reminisce for years to come, and the camaraderie of men who had proved themselves real men. It was not an adventure anymore, and no one had said anything about the promised girls for days. He said nothing to the servant, who strode away almost as purposefully as Lupescu, and ate his excellent lunch, then his excellent supper, and finally lay down where he was, protected by his excellent weather pack, to sleep as long as he liked. If the criminals got him, so much the better. Lupescu would find his head in a noose. He woke to the smell of wet leaves.
Good. No one will be skulking around in this, and Lupescu will have to let me sleep.
Lightning flashed, but the prince slept on, unconcerned. The Admiral Lupescu, who woke him in the dark, dripping aftermath of the storm, was someone he had never met. He could now credit the more vivid rumors about the Admiral's career. Faced with that cold, angry countenance, those still gray eyes with so much hunger in them, he wanted to please this man, and only the habits drilled into him from early childhood kept him from cringing apology.
I don't understand the problem. These are just criminals.
You don't have to understand. You have to obey, Your Highness.
But what's the hurry? You said we'd be here for 4 or 5 weeks, and it's only been...
Someone knows about the hunt. You wouldn't want to be compromised. You know what this could do to your future career. And we can't get them all without your help before we're discovered. Someone is bound to recognize Mr. Smith.
But surely... All right. I'll be glad to help out.
The moment it was out of his mouth, the prince realized how silly that sounded. He could feel his ears burn. He still didn't understand why they couldn't just flitter back to Bandon, take the shuttle up to the station, and find some compliant girls there. But he knew he couldn't ask Lupescu. Not now. The prince sighed, punched the button on his breakfast meal pack, and waited for it to heat. He would get his boots muddy again, and they would drag at his feet. He hated mud. This whole expedition looked more and more like a mistake rather than high adventure. The invitation had specified that they would be here in the dry season, that it could not possibly be compromised, and now he was going to be wet, muddy, and in trouble with his father. Not so much for blowing away a few criminals, or rather one criminal, as for getting caught doing it. Nonetheless, he set out to do what he was told and worked his way up the west side of the island. He left his comm unit off. He didn't want to be distracted by whatever might come over it. Twice, he saw something move that wasn't ID'd as Hunter and shot at it. Once, whoever it was shot back. He found 2 bodies, both criminals, with the ears clipped. Lupescu's plan didn't make sense to him. Herding the criminals into the interior ridge and its rough terrain would make a final cleanup harder. But he went along. He couldn't think of anything else to do. He followed the stream uphill because it was easier to walk that way. Bubbles looked up at the sound. She was sure it was loud enough to be heard outside. Had the hunters found another entrance? Was Petrus trying to find them?
We have to move, Rafa. We might find a better place to hide. And here we're trapped.
Good idea. We'll have to take the candles and mark our way.
We can't mark it. Someone could follow.
How could they tell how long ago the marks were made? We can't just go into the cave and not know how to get out.
Right.
Bubbles picked up her pack and stuffed into it everything of Kev's that would fit. Rafa would have to carry the rest. The night goggles gave her a blurry picture of the inside of the cave, and she could see a ledge extending along the left wall. Black water lay still and smooth at its edge. She fumbled at the rifle she'd taken, making sure it had a round in the chamber, and slung it on her shoulder.
This is an adventure. Just do it like you used to, and it will all come out right.
Rafa followed her lead. Bubbles shuffled along, wishing she dared light a candle as her vision dimmed. Even with the goggles, she could see very little by the time she came to the first angle of stone that blocked the entrance. She ducked around it and leaned against the damp wall. Ahead, all was black. Utterly black. Rafa touched her arm and she jumped.
I think it's safe to light the candles now. We're out of sight of the entrance.
But they could reflect on the water, and if we're the light source, then anyone hiding back here could see us first.
Yes, but if we don't have a light, we'll step off a ledge somewhere. We can't just feel our way along.
Oh, I know.